Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. It's the official podcast for the USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, free agency began not in earnest for the Lions on Monday as they broke the piggy bank and added a whole bunch of names in free agency. We will be talking about all that shortly. First, we'll start off with who they added to the roster. Number one, the big one, Trey Flowers, a defensive end from New England. Next was Justin Coleman, who's a nickel corner. They came from Seattle, but also has ties to the New England Patriots. Jesse James, tight end for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who got the Calvin Johnson rule changed back in favor of the receivers. Danny Amendola, slot wide receiver from Miami, but we all famously know him from New England. Ode Abushi, from offensive lineman from Arizona, also played with Bevel in Seattle back in 2017. Andrew Adams, safety from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who also spent time at the New York Giants with half of the defense as well. Re-signed running back Zach Zenner. Everybody's familiar with him. And the cuts, the easiest part of the coach's job. Number one was T.J. Lang, and there was a big savings associated with that. We'll talk about that. And cornerback Nevin Lawson, who Justin Coleman replaces on the roster. First, we're going to talk about the big signing. CBS has him as the number one free agent, and I think a lot of other publications did too. Was Trey Flowers, who got 5 years, $90 million, or $18 million per?
Yeah, I mean, this was the big fish, right?
Yep.
This was the guy who everybody looked at and said, man, it just makes a ton of sense because he is the perfect player for this scheme. It is at a need that they have. And the question was, as much as Bob Quinn is compared to doing things the Patriot way is not to spend on big name guys like this in free agency and let them go. And Quinn took the opposite approach and said, you know what, he's a guy, we need him. He'll impact the defense in a very positive way, and he was willing to pony up. So it veers off that whole Patriot way discussion, even though he comes from
New
England.
But it's a Patriot way guy.
Right.
The Lions are in a different position than New England is.
Absolutely. And I think that's what I think people forget, is that as much as Bob Quinn would love to not have to pay, the team isn't in a spot where they can just draft and develop. Bob Quinn needs to win now. And in order to do that, you have to allocate money in order to make that happen. And Flowers is going to do that in a more impactful way than anybody else out there could. He should have a Snacks Harrison type of impact where he just completely alters what they can do. Look, I was a fan of Ansa, and if he stayed healthy, I think he would have been very impactful. I like Aquara, but he's a third. He should be your third pass rusher, which he will be in this situation. You had him starting, and he wasn't able to impact the way that Flowers will. Flowers will be able to do so many different things. He has Deshaun Hand-like range, where he can play inside and outside, but he's got more pass rushing chops than Hand. He's one of the best run defenders in the league, and then you pair him next to Snacks, who is the best run defender in the league, and it's going to be a very difficult front to run on. And so this is what they want to do. They want to stop the run. This is how it makes it happen. I didn't think they'd pony up, but they did.
Yeah, they did. It's the largest value in contract for any player in free agency, $90 million, although only over 5 years. Nick Foles will get paid more per season. He only is getting $2 million less than only over 4 years from Jacksonville.
So here's some fun facts about Flowers. He had an offer on the table, from what I've been told, is he had
a mystery team.
He had an offer on the table for over 20.
From the Washington Redskins.
I don't know which team it was. Over 20. And he turned it down. So
that's just playful by his agent. Just trying to throw some disinformation out there.
The rumors that I had heard going into the hours leading up to free agency was he only wanted to play for Detroit or Miami because that's where his last two defensive coordinators were now head coaches, and those were the two spots that he was interested in. And then I was told he was offered more per, and he turned it down. And this was after the fact, right? And so I know we talk about, like, we've had this question in the past, like, free agents not wanting to come to Detroit. This is a player who wanted to come to Detroit. At his press conference today, he talked about how he has family in Michigan and in the Detroit area. And he talked about how...
He's going to have a whole lot more soon.
Right. And how he is familiar with Patricia. And yes, it's a nice contract for him, too, because they're giving him a ton of money up front in a signing bonus and in guaranteed. So, you know, you have to factor that in as well. There's maybe the $20 million a year team wasn't offering as much guaranteed, or maybe Detroit offered more in order to keep that number lower. So all kinds of factors that go into it. But the bottom line is that he wanted to come here, and they made it work. And they made it happen, and it is... an impressive addition to this defense.
You made an interesting statement a minute or two ago, and I'm going to follow up on it. Because we talked earlier about this, and our discussion was, well, you'd much rather have Trey Flowers, and there were numerous reasons for that. But one thing you definitely pointed out was Ziggy Ansah was a better athlete.
Yes.
But availability is the big issue.
Correct.
If Ziggy Ansah was healthy, would you rather have Ziggy or Trey Flowers? And he was known as being healthy. He was a 16-game-per-year type of guy over the last 4 years.
It's a good question, and I'd have to really, really think on it. But, I mean, because Ziggy's upside is really good. But you can't look past it. You know what I mean? Like,
you definitely have to take his health into consideration.
Yeah.
And I do understand your position of rather having Flowers. Sure. I would probably agree with you. I wish we didn't have to pay $90 million for him, but you have to be able to get him into your into your fold. But it was worth thinking about. If Ziggy was a healthy guy and he was coming up on free agency like he is right now,
sure.
Would you break the bank, go 5 years, $100 million
no.
for a healthy Ziggy Ansah?
I think he could, if he was healthy, I think Ziggy would get $590 million. I do.
Because I would argue you'd probably get more.
Maybe. I think, if you could trust him, he would make this money. I think he's that big of an upside type player.
That's enough of that, because we are talking in hypotheticals,
sure.
and that certainly isn't true. All right, the first question is from JC. Can you go into detail on Flowers' varied potential roles on defense?
So he's a down defensive end, right? So he takes that Ansah role. He puts Aquara into a more situational pass rushing role. And so you may think, man, how is – they just gave Aquara a lot of money. It's a lot of money to give someone who's basically only insurance. Well, the thing is he's not – Aquara is still going to see the field because of Flowers' range. He can play at right defensive end. He can play at left defensive end. And he can play inside at three technique. He can even play the zero in that NASCAR formation. That's what Hand was really good at last year as well. So you've basically got an interior guy with snacks and then next to him, you're going to have Ashawn, and then you have these two defensive end / defensive linemen that can move up and down the line and do a lot of different things. And if you get another pass rusher, there's going to be situational. Let's talk specifically about NASCAR. If they move Hand and Flowers inside, and then they move Kennard and Aquara on the outside, that's a lot of pass rushing, right? And I know that. It's not a lot of sacks on paper, but there's pressures to be had there. So it gives them a lot of versatility. And I think his ability to win inside is really going to keep a lot of options on the table for the Lions and what they're going to do. Because he's an excellent edge setter. Like I said, probably one of, if not the best, defensive ends in stopping the run in the NFL. And while his sacks are minimal, his pressures are up, and that's a key, and that's something the Lions were missing.
All right, so in their basic defense, even if it's the nickel, if they play nickel 70% of the time, although they didn't do that last season, who are the three that are on the field on the defensive line? So would that be Snacks, Hand, and Flowers? That would be your base defense with Kennard at the jack linebacker position?
Yeah, and you could argue it would be Ashawn instead of Hand.
Okay.
I mean, it just depends. But what I think people
No, everybody's more interested in how they're going to line up in a pass rushing sure. situation. I just wanted to ask
if
we're looking at the regular mm-hmm. defense, what are we going to see?
I think what people forget about the interior guys is that they don't play 100% of snaps. Asking Harrison to play 100% of snaps is not realistic. And I mean, you can get Ashawn up to 70. Hand has gotten up to 70. But even if they're on the field 60% of the time, each one of them 60% of the time, you're still rotating these guys through. So even though there's going to be technical starters, they have enough players to put to keep a fresh person out there 100% of the time is where I'm at. With Hand, Ashawn, and Snacks, and then Aquara and Flowers, you can now rotate those three spots, and you can even go four. But you can rotate those three spots 100% of the time and have somebody fresh constantly. And that is really what you want up front.
All right, the next question is from Alex Siegel. Is the Trey Flowers deal unreasonable or just exciting? I know how you're going to answer.
You know, when you look at some of the other contracts out there, I would say it's reasonable.
Yeah, well, when you first see it, because they signed him pretty quickly.
Sure.
Was that, this is probably unreasonable. This is a rather big contract. But I don't really think he was setting the market, because you saw how fast everybody else was getting signed and for what type of money. The market was already set. So mm-hmm. the Lions probably had a pretty decent idea of what they were going to have to pay for him.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily unreasonable. I don't really think it's necessarily exciting, though, either.
Here's the thing. You're paying Flowers $18 million at a premium pass rushing position. C.J. Mosley got $17 million
now, we can't, at Mike. Even though we count in this bucket, mm-hmm. you can't consider what the Jets do or what the Redskins do as what a normal smart football team does. So I always take those signings with a grain of salt.
My point is that it's reasonable when you look at what the market is right now.
Yeah, no, right? I don't disagree with that.
Okay, yeah, because I know it's a lot, but the franchise money that people are that are handing out to these defensive ends before free agency is up in this range, and then you've basically fixed him at this average for the next 5 years, whereas over the next 5 years you're going to see a cap increase, and that defensive end position is going to continue to be a position that rises, and pretty soon they're going to be making over 20 and he's going to be still at 18, and it's going to look a lot better in a couple years as well. Looks good now, better in a couple years.
All right, next up is Justin Coleman, 4 years, $36 million. A cousin, quote-unquote, or they say brother, of Darius cousin. Slay and Tracy Walker. They all went to Brunswick High School down in Georgia.
Well, Tracy Walker and Slay are actually cousins, but Justin Coleman is not. But they
figurative
all went to
cousin.
Yes, they all went to the same high school. Like, how you like that talent pool, right? You've got...
Hey, Bobby Lane and Matthew Stafford went to the same high school, the arguably two best quarterbacks in team history, although I'd lump Dutch Clark in there somewhere.
Right. I mean, Slay and Coleman were on the same 4x1 team in high school, right? They ran track together. Slay was a couple years older. Coleman comes in. He's got some speed. He's got more quickness, better ball skills. And he didn't want to lock himself in at slot or outside, and there's been a little bit of debate on where he best fits. I think he's a slot cornerback. Last 2 years in Seattle, he's been a slot cornerback, and he's thrived. The 2 years prior in New England with Patricia, he played outside about two-thirds of the time and inside a third of the time. But even when he was at Tennessee, I projected him as a slot guy. I think that's where he's going to be the most successful. Now, could he be a Nevin Lawson type guy where you flex him outside in two cornerback sets, especially considering we don't know who that outside corner is going to be right now? You know, is it going to be one of the guys on the team, or are they going to add maybe a rookie? Because we don't know who that outside corner is, it's very possible that they flex him outside when there are only two corners on the field, then push him inside. The Patriots have done that a lot. They did that with not Malcolm Butler, but the other guy that was a real big name a year before. Patricia did that with him a ton. Blanking on the name, but Patricia
Gilmore.
No, Gilmore's the guy there now. He was a free agent who left New England and is now. It was 2 years ago we were talking about adding him. Anyway, my point is that it's not an unfamiliar territory for Patricia to utilize a guy both inside and out. And that utilization gives him a lot of range. Now, you're paying him good money, and it's
top-notch money.
If he's an inside corner, it's top-notch money. If he's an outside corner, it's actually average. You know what
well,
I mean?
What was Nevin Lawson still hasn't signed with anybody. No. I was wondering what he would get.
A lot less. Half.
You would hope. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about Justin Coleman to say
he'd get half that, honestly. But Coleman was a guy who went undrafted, but he was one of these guys that had an elite three cone, and he had actually, I think he was had the fastest three cone in his draft class, and so it was almost known that the Patriots would be pursuing him hard. And so now as we've been upgrading this secondary, we're starting to see the same concepts of good three-cone corners filter into this roster. And so when we get into the draft stuff and we start talking more about like the corners in the draft, that's a number we're really going to have to pay attention to. Coleman, he's an excellent ball skills guy. So that's really is what I think one of the most appealing things to him is he can put his hands on the balls and get past deflections. He can intercept the ball. Those are things that Lawson couldn't do that Coleman can. So that's why I like it.
Between the Numbers asks, under Patricia, is the slot corner and nickel base looks really like cornerback two, and cornerback three is the guy who comes in to play outside. As a result, do we need to adjust how we view and categorize the cornerback positional depth chart, as Coleman seems likely play outside cornerback two for two cornerback run heavy looks?
You know, it is becoming a blurred category. I mean, that's what's happening a lot with the NFL in almost all the positions, right? Wasn't too long ago that we were just calling defensive ends and then 3-4 outside linebackers. Now we call that category edge, right? And then we had nickel backs and cornerbacks and then slot safety. Now there's all kinds of different variations of how these guys are able to blend their positions over into different categories. And so, yeah, I think that's coming. I think the lines are going to get blurred here between, who's technically an outside guy or an inside guy. I mean, look at the offensive line. We're starting to see right tackles money start to increase at a high level where they're almost getting the same as left tackle money. And that's just speaks to the fact that you've got good edge rushers on both sides of the ball now in the NFL. And so you need tackles that can both, you got to pay them on both sides now. You can't just pay one side.
But the tackles don't change, only their money's changing.
Well, correct. But I mean, that's what I'm getting at is the different positions are becoming more valuable in this, sure, this flexibility of being able to do multiple things and not being categorized into one is becoming more and more common in today's NFL.
All right. Next up is tight end Jesse James, 4 years, $25 million.
It's a really good deal for him considering what the market was for tight ends. He probably came in a little bit lower than what he could have made, comparatively to what some of the other guys are making. But I think he's going to be the number two tight end. I still think they're going to go after a move tight end in the draft.
But eight?
No.
Oh, boy.
I don't think at eight. Remember, I think the tight end's sweet spot is in the teens or in the second round.
Yeah.
But James is good enough that you don't have to reach on one of these tight ends. He is kind of a low-end tight end one, high-end tight end two. And you're paying him like a high-end tight end two. And so he gives you some flexibility to not feel like you have to reach. He's a really good run blocker. He's typically underutilized in the passing game in Pittsburgh. Keep in mind what Pittsburgh has at the skill positions, right? They've always had good tight ends, and then they had Antonio Brown and, all these other guys, right? So, a second tight end was not going to get a whole lot of targets in Pittsburgh. That should be different here because Bevel prioritizes tight ends, and he if you can block, which James very much can, you're going to find a role on the field, and you're going to be out there quite a bit. And so this was an important position, and I think it sets them up nicely to not be pigeonholed in the draft, but also gives them some stability on the depth chart.
Lois Beanie, or is this Lewis Beanie?
Lois.
Okay, it's Lois. Lois's question is, what do you think of JJ's presser? Was he nervous? He seemed overly cautious.
He was first up. They introduced Flowers, Coleman, and James in press conferences today. James was the first one up. They asked him some awkward questions about the atmosphere in Pittsburgh right now, which is very interesting, because you got to remember Antonio Brown forced his way out, Le'Veon Bell forced his way out, and so he was getting questions about what's the atmosphere like in Pittsburgh and are you happy to be out of that, you know, atmosphere. And so he was trying not to bash Pittsburgh, but also express his excitement for being here. He felt, and then he said, I think I can be utilized better here. And then the next question was, well, what was it about Pittsburgh that you weren't being utilized appropriately? What was it? What were they not doing with you? So like he kind of either stepped out himself, or the questions were really a little bit controversial for like a right out of the gate. And so I think that kind of put him on edge a little bit. I didn't think too much about like his nervousness.
Next signing, we're going to talk about Danny Amendola, 1 year, $4.5 million, maybe the least inspired move. Worth noting, Golden Tate got 4 years, $37.5 million from the Giants today. Amendola, he's 33 years old. He had a big playoffs in 2017, but he didn't do much in Miami last year.
He was actually their leading. But you also
less than 10 yards of reception. Not too great. That's not too out of the ordinary for a slot receiver, but he's not a touchdown guy. He doesn't make big plays unless you're in the 2017 playoffs.
What I don't understand is how he was limited either, because he had such a stellar quarterback throwing him.
Oh, yeah. Does Danny Amendola deserve any talk from us?
He does. I was joking. It was Osweiler was throwing to him. I know Osweiler's your guy.
We had Ryan Tannehill for 11 games, Brock Osweiler for 5. Hey, for many years, I was on the right side of that Brock Osweiler argument, Case Keenum. Now they're drawing even again. You know, I really only lost for 1.5 years, but it was like a big loss in that 1.5 years.
I tell you why I like I don't like the money for Amendola. 4.5 is a lot. I would have liked to have seen something lower. But I can deal with the signing because it's a stopgap. Again, it softens the ability to add a receiver in the draft where you don't, again, have to reach. And he gives you somebody to help mentor Brandon Powell, who they are invested in. So he's reliable. He runs crossing routes really well. Stafford throws crossing routes really well. Could be a nice marriage. But I was a little underwhelmed by the price.
All right, moving on. Odey Abushi. 1 year, up to $2 million. You don't have the exact number, offensive lineman.
Yeah. So
flexible.
He played left tackle at Virginia, and then he came into league, played left guard for the Jets for a bit, then switched to the right side. Then he played right side in Seattle for Bevel, right side last year in Arizona. He only started in Arizona, though, because of injury. And so it's not like he's the guy who's going to come in and start.
He's this year's Kenny Wiggins.
Exactly. And he has that inside-outside flexibility like Wiggins does. He has a history to play right guard like Wiggins does. So it's competition for that.
All right, the latest Lion, the newest Lion, is Andrew Adams, a safety from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 4 interceptions last year, 3 in one game.
Yeah, Cam Newton threw it to him 3 times. You know, he also had 9 passes. Breakups, which is nice. That kind of, and considering
on the field only 30% of the time. This is a number from Eric.
Yeah, 380% or 380 snaps.
He's out there offense, defense, and special teams at 380%.
380 snaps. He knocked a pass down 9 times and picked off 4. So it's not a bad ratio there for him. He can play deep safety, which is really, I think, where he's that single high is where they're looking to add more help. Both Diggs and Walker can play there, but it'd be nice to have another body who can play that as well. I think he'll push Charles Washington because, like Washington, he can play special teams. But Adams has more dependability on the field than Washington does, so I think Washington could be a little worried. It's possible he jumps over Tavon Wilson for that safety three spot. I don't think he necessarily will, but if Adams is your fourth safety going into the new the league this year, then it's not horrible.
All right, next up, a man left for dead last season, but then brought back and now still a favorite of the fans. Zach Zenner returns on 1 year, $1.05 million contract.
Yeah. Look, I know people love him. He's not going to be your second running back, though. He's an excellent special teamer.
Well, let me ask you a question then from Steven Misilowski. Yeah. Is Zenner a true running back, too? If not, do you expect a draft addition, which round, or a free agent signing? Who?
I do expect them to do one of the two. My guess is they'll go to the draft. They don't seem to be very aggressive in free agency. There's still a couple of good running backs out there. T.J. Yeldon, Marshawn Lynch, Spencer Ware, Ajay Anderson, C.J. Anderson. But my guess is they would go to the draft. Zenner's fine, but he's a reserve. He's not a guy who should be in the rotation early. And I know people are going to get mad at that, but that's the facts.
He's going to start a few games next year. Just wait and see.
Just based on like how injuries happen at the position. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
All right, Hail Mary. I'll piggyback onto Steven's question. I see two other running backs on the roster. M. Thompson, I believe that's Mark Thompson.
Yep.
And K. Williams, is that Kevin Williams?
No, it's Kerwin.
Kerwin Williams. He was from the Cardinals, right?
Yeah,
where he made the most noise like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Who are they, and what are the chances of them making the 53-man roster? Is Theo Riddick staying?
Riddick's the big question mark right now. Johnson, Riddick, and Zenner seem good. The other two guys, I wouldn't really worry about them yet.
All right. That's it for the signings. Let's move on to talking about the salary cap. Where do we stand as of today, Eric? Where are we right now?
Okay, so
how much money do we have left to burn?
We don't have Ibushi or Adams numbers. But when you factor in the draft class, you factor in $7 million that you think Bob's going to keep to take into the season, they're sitting at around just under $8.5 million in available funds. $18.5 million in available funds. Ibushi and Adams will take $2.5 to $3.5 million out of that. So they're still at $15 million that they can spend, which means they've still got places that they can target, and they've still got positions that they need to add. And just quick glance at, they've got 12 needs and 9 draft picks. So you're probably going to add at least 3 to 5 more guys in free agency at some point.
Dave's got a question. It's a pretty good one. Any ideas why they're backloading most of the contracts of newly signed players? Planning for extensions in camp, I guess the first one would be Decker.
It's a really good question. I don't think Decker, because Decker, they can pick up an option on him.
Oh, they have one more here.
Glasgow and Ashawn would be the camp extensions.
They would be the guys.
Yeah. But the thing is,
one expensive offensive line.
Yeah, for sure.
In 2 years.
Here's the thing, though. It's not 100% clear on why they're backloading. And it's not just Detroit. Other teams are backloading, too. And there's been a lot of debate amongst the Lions writers on exactly why this is. And basically, the only thing that jumps out is that the CBA is coming up in 2020, and so they have to have some indicator of some changes. And so I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know what they're going to do, but there's something coming up.
All right, let's move on and talk about the roster a little bit. Alex Stahl and Fudu ask similar questions. Beyond starters, what spots on the roster have glaring holes, i.e. depth spots? Forget about depth starters, Joe.
So I said there's 12.
What are the 12?
They've said they want a veteran quarterback and a reserve, so that's two. They need that running back, too. They need a tight end. That's probably a starter. A wide receiver depth, so maybe like a wide receiver 4, or maybe they can push Amendola for 3. You need right guard competition, possibly even a starter. You need a corner, a starter on the outside.
6 on offense, that's right. The first on defense.
Yeah. You need a 4th defensive tackle. Now, maybe Atkins is your guy, and you don't need to add another one, but I think they will. I would add more jack depth to the roster. I'd also add another safety and a linebacker.
It's 11.
As depth. Oh, so they must have filled somebody then. I didn't pay attention.
Oh, boy.
I thought it was 12.
All right.
So
it's okay. It's all right. You went to Michigan. You won't get the number exactly. All right. Next up from Jeremy Kajak. Is it too early to extend Snacks now?
I think it is because you have him at $7 million with no cap responsibility other than just his base for 2 more years. And that's reasonable.
Yeah, I'd definitely wait at least another year because there's some crazy injury.
Exactly.
To him, you know.
Exactly.
It's a business. Sorry, Snacks.
You would be increasing your cap now and doing it 2 years early.
All right. Moving on to free agency. Matt Smith has a question. We were already in free agency, but I guess these are the more expansive free agency questions.
Right.
Matt Smith, what positions do you think the Lions should address in both the draft and free agency? Seems like a few positions could use a play now guy and developmental piece. Well, let me guess. Running back, cornerback, linebacker, maybe?
I wouldn't say, you know, I think we've already seen it, right? Like wide receiver, we've already seen, and wide receiver and tight end, we've already seen free agents. Now we're going to see, we should probably see draft picks at both those spots. Same thing with corner.
Offensive line.
And offensive line. Those are your main areas where I think they've already added, and they'll probably add in the draft as well.
Is it possible that Connor Cook, is the only free agent pickup at quarterback with another competition picked up in the draft?
Sure.
Please not in the first round. Or do you see the Lions bringing in another Castle-type signing in free agency? I have a feeling that's what it's going to be. We lost out on Teddy Bridgewater. Bridgewater list.
Well, the thing is that quarterback market was thin to begin with and is even thinner now.
Yeah.
Castle might be your best option.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, you could say...
Somebody's got to get cut. Jameis Winston will get cut. Get him to be the backup.
Tom Savage. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick's out there. If you want to pay him.
The beard. Maybe he's got a little magic left. Yeah.
Osweiler has ties to our quarterback's coach.
And a bet of mine.
And Tom Savage has ties to our quarterback's coach. And then Matt Castle has ties to our actual coach.
And our team.
Yeah. So those are the three guys I'd pay attention to.
All right. Toblerone Bone. Who are the guys that fit as a veteran back? We already answered
that. Yep. Sorry.
Well, Toblerone, your question's already been answered. Nassim asks, Isaiah Crowell, any chance we go after him? I hope not. People are going to try to start him in their fantasy leagues week 7.
I was told no, that there was a attitude issue that they didn't like about him. Do you remember a couple years back he had a thing where he lashed out about some police officers and talked about he said some pretty derogatory things and then later apologized.
I'm sure that's what happened.
And then later he apologized for it and he apparently has been model citizen since, but it's left a sour taste. I was told that that never set well with the Lions.
All right, D Money 313. What are the chances the Lions take a chance on John Ross if he checks out okay?
I mean, he fits the scheme. How do you trust him?
All right. Jay Gala, do you see any scenario where we actually go after Justin Houston with all our cap space or trade for another star? Obviously, first comes to mind as Patrick Peterson.
You know, we talk about the fact that they've got $18 million, right now, probably closer to $15 million. But a guy like Peterson would chew all of that up, and they still have other needs, and they need to sign undrafted guys like that. I don't think a big splash like Houston or Peterson is going to happen. I think it's going to be a lot of second-tier guys, and they're going to fill a lot of holes and bring in a lot of depth, and then they're going to add at least 5 more guys, which you can do with 15. Maybe you get a guy who's, unexpected, but I don't think a Justin Houston type is on the docket.
Well, Jay Gala, there's your wet blanket. Thanks for asking your question.
Sorry.
Dustin Blackwell, how, if at all, does free agency affect our draft pick?
It fills needs, right? And so it's what you're doing is, and Bob Quinn's approach here is he wants to get a guy that is good enough to fill a role and challenge if he needs to for a starting spot, but also a guy that he thinks he can upgrade from in the draft. Basically, he wants to put himself in a situation where the whole best player available is legit what we're going after here.
All right. Saying best player available, talking about the draft, we're going to roll right into the draft. Daniel Reese asks, with our current free agent additions, is Bob Quinn more likely to go best player available?
Yeah, at this point, the way he's setting himself up and the way that the talent is at the draft, I think it's going to be best player available.
Could be Dwayne Haskins at number 8. Blake Berry asks, is it impossible to predict who Bob Quinn is going to draft? Yes, it is.
It's pretty hard. I don't know.
I don't know
if I've landed one of Quinn's first rounders yet.
I don't believe so. You didn't have Frank Ragnow.
Or Davis. I had Taylor Decker. I did have that one.
No,
right.
You are right. I do remember that. All right. T.O. asks, top three positions. Okay, so Blake, Eric has a 33% chance of figuring it out. All right. T.O., the top three positions of need post-free agency. We already kind of discussed
it. It's guard, tight end, and corner.
Ride With My Pride asks, what positions would you consider with our first three picks?
Well, the talent, based on the talent of the draft. And
the ebb and flow of the expected ebb and flow of the draft.
Mm-hmm. Is really the talent at the top. There's a tight end and a receiver, a couple tight ends and a receiver you could talk yourself into, but it's mostly going to be defensive line guys at the top. So I think I still am leaning towards that defensive line in the first round. Then in the second round, you've got these three needs at tight end, guard, and corner, and you're only going to have two picks. So you're either going to have to fill one of those needs in free agency, and then that helps you out, or you're going to have three needs in two spots. So maybe that's where the trade back maybe comes in. But if you're taking best player available, you're probably getting two of those top three filled out in that either tight end, corner, or guard. You're probably going to get both those filled. One of them is probably going to be a day three guy then.
Jovan Willis, Dan Snellwood, and Greg O'Leary ask similar questions. With Trey Flowers coming to Detroit, it seems that down defensive end, such as Rashawn Gary or Montez Sweat, is a lesser issue. I still would like the Lions to beef up the defensive line, make it a terror for quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Would Brian Burns make sense? Would he play a role similar to Kennard?
So after they signed Flowers, the first article that I wrote was, even though they signed Flowers, an edge should still be on the table at pick 8. And I agree, and I even said in the article, both Gary and Sweat, Gary for sure, is off the board. I think he's too similar to Flowers, and you're not adding somebody that can fill that role, because you also have Aquara right there as well. So I think Gary it doesn't make sense to take a guy who's only a down. If you think Sweat can stand up, sure. I don't. So he's kind of not on my table. But Burns, I think, can stand up. And that's why I do think Burns is still in the mix. Obviously, Josh Allen would be the man. And he's your off-the-ball will linebacker. But I do think Burns can be very much in the mix at 8 there.
All right, segueing off of that, Ryan asks, is there a scenario, and he stresses any scenario, Josh Allen falls to 8?
There is. And based on some of the stuff that we've heard at the Combine is some of these teams are falling in love with positions and players that we didn't originally think would go in the top 7. And that things like somebody really likes a linebacker and somebody really likes an offensive tackle. And if you have a quarterback, an offensive tackle, a linebacker,
two quarterbacks.
A second quarterback, and then you have Bosa and Quinnen Williams, and all of a sudden you only need a guy or two to come into play. I've heard Ed Oliver's probably going to go higher, which again, and all of a sudden Josh Allen could be there. So it's possible. I'm not getting my hopes up because I still have him as the number 3 player in the draft, and he might even be the top player on the Lions board. But there's a scenario where it could happen.
All right, Charles Townsend, obviously, if Josh Allen were to slide to 8, the Lions take him, no questions asked. But what if the stars align just right and Quinnen Williams was sitting there at 8? Do you take him, or is that the perfect leverage for a trade back?
I would take him because I think he's generational. I think his talent is if Bosa, Allen, or Williams are there, you take them. I don't care where you're picking. If you're picking at 3 or 8 or 20, you take them when you're there because those guys' talent supersedes whatever pick number you're at.
All right, Under Construction asks, if we do draft a defensive lineman in the top 10, is A'shaun Robinson the odd man out?
No, not yet. I think it could hurt his extension.
Plenty of room for rotational guys.
Yeah, and as we talked about that earlier, they only play like 60%, so it would make an extension a little bit harder. But I mean, he's not. It's not like they're going to cut him or trade him or anything like that. In my mind,
does trading back give us more value for where we are picking?
Sure, absolutely. And I think if you're in a best players available scenario and the guy that you want isn't there and you have the opportunity to trade back, the sweet spot in this draft is really second day. There's going to be so many guys on that second day that really are talented that you could probably start. So if you can trade back, do it.
Jay Gala muscles his way back into the questions after being wet blanketed earlier. The defensive class in general is strong for this draft, while there are only a few potential quarterbacks who will be first-round picks. What are the chances we trade back with a team looking to snag a quarterback, and what would the appropriate compensation be? If we do trade back, would tight end be priority?
Yeah, and it just depends on how far back we have to trade. So it's hard to say what the compensation would be, but I definitely think if they trade back, that's a really good spot to get one of the Iowa tight ends.
Keith asks, will the Lions make a running back a priority by at least to the third round?
I think if they add a running back, it's probably day three. It's possible they go in the third. I wouldn't think any higher, though.
Greg Warren, between his size, 5'9", 166 pounds, and the Lisfranc injury, what's the earliest the Lions would even consider Marquise Brown after seeing the effects the same injury had on Amir Abdullah? Seems he would be completely off their board, given the need. They need impact players almost immediately.
Yeah, I wrote an article about this. I think he's day three, and I think somebody else is going to take a risk on him earlier than that. So I think for the Lions, it's too close to home.
Kyle Gieraga, I don't know if that's correct. What are the most likely round 2 to 4 wide receivers the Lions would target, assuming we go edge / defense in the first?
Again, I'm kind of leaning that receivers another thing that you can get on day three, because there's good guys, but there's still going to be guys at that same there's guys that you can get on day three that you could probably still get that same level of talent in day two. Like, there's not a big jump, so you know, Andy Isabella could slide. Terry McLaurin from Ohio State, I don't know if he's going to slide, but right now he's kind of projected to slide into that fourth round. Those are guys that fit that speed quotient. They could really fit the mold of what the Lions are looking for. I mean, I'd love Deebo Samuel in the second round, but I don't think they're going to do it. Darius Slayton from Auburn is another speed guy. And we talked about Keelan Doss previously as well, kind of a bigger outside guy. So those are some names right off the top of my head in that third, fourth round range that I think the Lions will be looking at.
Jimmy's question, which tight ends do you like for the Lions in the draft that aren't from the University of Iowa, and why?
Irv Smith's my number three. I know he checked in a little bit lower in height than what people wanted, and the fact that he's shorter is why he's in round two, because I think the talent is round one talent, but he just doesn't have the size of like O.J. Howard did before him. Jake Sternberger is also a guy who should go in round two. He's Travis Kelce-like skills. Yeah, he's just not as experienced. Kahale Waring, Isaac Nada. I know Isaac had a really bad combine, but he's still kind of fits what they want to do, possibly in round three. Dawson Knox is kind of a sleeper guy who has some George Kittle to his game. And then Caden Smith out of Stanford is another guy who is, you know, big and a good blocker, but has some really strong hands. So those are the guys I would be looking at on that day two.
Lyle Klo and Mazur ask similar questions. I've seen tackles projected in the first round. Can you see the Lions taking a guard in the first round, or do they need to move down as not to reach?
I don't think there's a guard worthy of a top 10 pick. You might see some guards go in the back end of round one, but I would not take a guard unless I was picking in the mid-20s, late 30s. That would be the earliest.
Sticking to the offensive line, kick, Craig Medeiros asks, with Wagner being a possible cap cut next year, could you see the Lions drafting Jonah Williams this year as an offensive guard and next year play right tackle for Wagner?
Thing is I think you already have this scenario.
It's Tyrell Crosby.
Exactly. I don't think you need to add Jonah Williams when you have Crosby in this exact scenario right now. I get the concept. but I wouldn't do it.
Greg O'Leary, what are some of the guards that hit the quib marks in this draft?
Garrett Bradbury is the top guy on my board.
Where's Chris, Garrett Bradbury from?
NC State. He's a center. Chris Lindstrom's a right guard. And then Eric McCoy from Texas A&M is also a center who can play guard. Dalton Risner is a right tackle who is projected as an inside guy who could play right tackle. Elgin Jenkins and Connor McGovern. Those are the guys right now that hit in that range. Risner, Jenkins, and McGovern need to improve or need to have a 10-time. Risner needs to improve his. Then they would all be full quib.
All right, Jeremy Kijak knew what you were going to say and wanted to build on it. Any possibility of drafting Bradbury and moving Glasgow to guard?
I don't think they're going to move Glasgow. I think if you draft a guy like Bradbury or McCoy, that guy plays right guard. I don't think they're going to move Graham. I think they really like him there.
Charles Townsend, last time I complained about people mocking Farrell at 8, which would have been me. This time it's greedy, and I'm going to complain about This team has no time for an outside corner who puts zero effort in a run defense, especially after they just signed a corner, Justin Coleman, whose purported weakness is in run support.
The thing is he wasn't a bad run support guy. Justin Coleman wasn't a bad run support guy when he played for the Patriots or when he played at Tennessee. Those were strengths of his. He wasn't as good in Seattle.
Had a rough time in Seattle.
Yeah, as far as run defense. He struggled against the run with them. But I think it's actually something that Coleman's very capable of. But I don't think Greedy's in the mix. There's so many factors that tell me Greedy's not in the mix. I'm going to say it till I'm blue in the face. I'm not expecting him to be here.
Steven Misilovsky, give me 3 cornerback, 2 free agent or draft names to keep an eye out on for that can come in and start day one next to Slay.
These are the 3 guys that I've been touting for a while now. The Penn State guy who I can never get his name, Awarie, right?
Awarie. I'm sure we're close enough.
Amani, Justin Lane, and David Long. Give me any of those guys in round 2 and watch them start on the outside. Nice thing is about Long is I've talked about that 3-cone being really good and being an indicator, and Long can play inside out. That's why I think Long could really be a sneaky target, although Lane and Awarie have some superior length and height that really kind of makes them real fun in this system.
All Big Ten guys.
Yep, every one of them.
Two of the 3 are local-ish.
Yep.
Daniel Reese from Detroit Lions Daily Mock Draft asked similar questions. Are there any guys that came out of nowhere at the Combine that the Lions would have interest in the later rounds?
The biggest guy, and I don't even know if he's going to go in the later rounds because linebacker is kind of a mixed bag, but the biggest guy who kind of jumped out that people were like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that, was Blake Cashman out of Minnesota. He plays their inside will, which is exactly the same position that Christian Jones plays with the Lions, and he was a guy who showed like Eric Kendricks-type skills on the field, but he was only a 1-year starter, and they weren't really sure what to expect of him, and he tested out of the water. So he's a guy who I really think would
tested
be
tested out of
fun.
The water?
Yeah, like he jumped out of the water.
No, I got you.
I think we missed Ryan's question, by the way.
Oh, I do. Well, then let's back
fits
up.
Fits right in line with what I was just talking about, though.
So. Ryan Anton, do you think the Lions are looking to upgrade from Christian Jones? If so, does Devin Whiten play at 8th overall? He's fast, he can blitz, and the big one, he can cover.
Yeah, but he can't read gaps. And that's a problem.
And Jared Davis has problems with that, too.
Exactly.
So we want to have 2 linebackers like that.
Yes. It would be. Look, the appeal of having Devin White and Davis on the field, the athleticism would be unreal. But they don't read gaps. You need somebody who can read gaps. That's actually why I have Devin Bush ahead of Devin White on my board, and why a guy like Blake Cashman could be a guy who they take a little bit later if they are looking to bring competition in. My count for Devin White is Jared Davis because they have the same strengths, the same weaknesses. And while that's fun, the weaknesses, if somebody figures that out, it could be a real problem.
It's interesting, too. We'd be spending a number 8 overall pick on White, and we did not spend an 8th overall pick on Davis.
Exactly. And that's why I don't think a linebacker, an off-the-ball linebacker, is in play at 8 in this scheme.
We have a couple extra minutes. Mm-hmm. Eulogize TJ Lang for us. We had one little blurb about him. He's gone. He only played 1 year, but he's an Eastern Michigan and Birmingham Brother Rice guy. He's local, has a hot dog eating record, or close to it, at Hippo Hot Dogs, from at least what I can remember.
you know, he's always been good.
They're not sponsored.
He's always been good for the organization. He's always been good for the city. There's rumors he's seriously considering retirement. Not that he will, but he's considering it. I don't think he's really gotten any attention in free agency, which means he's, to me, he's probably leaning towards retirement more than not. He said some really nice things about the Lions and the organization on social media. He went on the radio and he talked very nicely about them. And he continues to tout this. I hope we... remember when we beat the Lions beat the Packers, and he said, "Don't give up on us." In his goodbye message, he said, "I know it's no longer us, but don't give up on them. I still consider like myself like part of us. I still don't want fans to give up on the Lions because he thinks the Lions are headed in the right direction." So he's not been nothing but class since he joined the organization. He's been great since in the days since he's left. I think there's bigger plans for him. I think there's a way for him back into the organization to do stuff with them. He's such a great personality. Like, he could be a guy who does like spots for them in their media department, and you know, maybe he'll take some time off and if he does retire, but I think he's got a big future, and I think the Lions would be smart to keep tabs on him and make sure that he's feeling the love, which they've been accused of not doing with other past players.
Now, some might be hearing that we have a sound effect for our shout-outs. We just happen to have a fighter jet flying overhead over the studios, and we're not soundproofed out here. Maybe you should eulogize Nevin Lawson first, but he's got a lot more NFL time left, so we'll let that be. We'll see him again, I'm sure. Let's go to the podcast shout-outs. We made another move this week. We added a few more reviews.
Yeah, we got three more reviews. Box Sunday, Todd Pruitt, Morgan Cannon. Morgan actually reached out and said, you know, how do I do it? And, like, what do I do? And so I appreciate the effort that you guys made to take the time to add those reviews. So continues to get us up. We're starting to get some reports from iTunes now, which is a new thing. And shows we're growing a little bit.
And yeah, we're growing. More continues. And more people are listening, so we're appreciative of that. That's for sure.
Yeah. So the effort that
makes us keep doing this every week,
right? And the the effort that I know people make to spread the word about us is really appreciative. I know that's happening all the time as well.
That's it. We actually got to everybody's questions. We did a lot better than we did last week in the 100th anniversary episode. This is the 101st.
Yeah, you know, I think I tried to summarize things. I try not to be as long-winded this time. Hopefully, I can keep those going and keep things a little bit shorter. You know, next week we'll probably have a few more signings to talk about, but then
they'll be more minor.
Yeah,
not as much to dig into.
Which means it's going to be a lot of draft.
Yeah,
stuff.
Draft time. Talking about the draft. Maybe something weird will happen in the next week. And we'll be able to talk about that.
Yeah, like
they'll change the color to red. We're not going to be Honolulu Blue anymore. I'm going to wear red.
Maybe they sign Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, you never know.
You know?
Would he fit?
Sure. He's played, but he thrived.
He's a Bevel guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Except for the last play of Super Bowl.
Oh, jeez.
A couple Super Bowls ago. All right. We've dragged us on long enough. We thank everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next week. And until that time, let's go Lions.